everybody. Welcome back once again to the Big Igloo Podcast. We are Smart Theology, Dumb Dad Jokes here. And it is the Big Igloo Podcast, and we are going to talk about little igloos today, oddly enough. All right, and irony.
So, yeah.
I don't know. Little igloos. So, no, we're not talking about little igloos. I just like having fun. It's just we're getting the dad jokes rolling. Oh, I got a couple here, by the way.
There we go.
Right. We're still working through our way through this 200 list. No particular order. Hey, Travis, where do pirates get their hooks?
I don't know.
Secondhand stores. Come on.
Yep. Come on.
All right. Of all the inventions of the last 100 years, the dry erase board has to be the most remarkable. And you guys are both proud owners of remarkable tablets.
Not at the moment. Mine's dead.
Oh.
Well, in the water.
Well, I was going to say this podcast brought to you by the Remarkable, but it's not. No, we don't have sponsors here, and doesn't look like we're going to get a sponsorship anytime soon here. So
we're too real.
Travis already just shot that down. So, well, whatever. I'm using a super note here. So, but anyway, yeah, it's all right. It's all right. You know, I don't know if that's a solid ringing endorsement.
My Remarkable is not dead.
Okay.
Just throw that out there.
You have a Remarkable?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you got one of those.
No, I preach off my Remarkable every week.
Wow.
I love them.
That's good.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Commercial's over. Here we go. All right. All right. Well, hey, we are working through some parables here. We're not going to get to every single parable, but, you know, my heart really in doing this series is really to kind of help our listeners, our viewers, kind of just give them some interpretive principles when it comes to parables. You know, parables are one of those things that, you know, they can be a little strange. They can be a little like, what's the point here? And sometimes you can press parables too far to get them to say something that maybe the original audience wasn't supposed to, or they wouldn't have picked up on, you know? But at the same time, some of these parables can be a little bit obscure. And why is Jesus telling this? And sometimes Jesus just kind of like walks away from a story and you're like,
mic drop.
Yeah, what's going on here? And so we're gonna discuss a familiar parable here. See if I can say parable the right way. We're going to discuss a familiar one here. And, you know, this comes in the series of lost things, you know, lost sheep, lost coin. This is about the lost son. Of course, this is the prodigal son. That word prodigal has been used, you know, more in contemporary language or in language that commentators and, you know, theologians we've kind of put that on there.
Sure.
But, you know, this idea of prodigal, we'll get to kind of the definition of that here in a second. But let's go ahead and jump in. And here's what I want to do. I know in the very first episode to kick off this series, we talked about the parable of the sower, know, and this idea that Jesus, he would say many times, he who has ears, let him hear. And I think we're to just kind of infer from that, that as people, we don't have a very good, we have a listening problem. That's what we do. We have a problem listening. We do it all the time. We do it in conversations. And so the parables do make us stop. And there's something about storytelling that kind of gets behind our psyche and kind of underneath and kind of comes in the back door and does kind of hook us, right? Because it depersonalizes it. It makes us think about, oh, this is out there. So I'm removed from it, you know, but it can bring up implications for us as individuals. So I think on a fundamental level, parables do have a way of teaching us almost in a more passive sense. I don't know. You guys got any thoughts on there or anything you want to add to that before we kind of dive in?
No.
No. All right.
Articulated that great.
So we're gonna talk about this. Now, just so our listeners and viewers know, if you didn't check out those episodes, someone who's kind of like kind of helped me kind of reshape or just helped me better understand these things, Craig Blomberg, he's got a couple books. One is Preaching the Parables, and I would say that's definitely more accessible to most readers. So if you're interested in this, he talks about as a pastor how he has preached through different parables. But then he's got an academic work, and I mean, it is tough. I mean, it's tough to get. It's not that it's hard to understand, but he does a really good job of just talking about church history, how we've, you know, held on to parables. But it's some in-depth reading, all right, you know, and I struggle at times to even get through of it just to keep the idea straight and stuff. But one of the things Blomberg, I really like what I've gleaned from his work is he kind of takes a one lesson per character approach. That he has basically kind of boiled it down to, you know, if you have a three character parable, there's a lesson from each character.
Yeah.
And I think it's a model that holds up, and we'll get to that here in a second here with the parable of the prodigal son. So you guys ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
Here we go here. This is of course in Luke chapter 15. Jesus is speaking. He says, there was a man who had two sons. He has two sons. Two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of the property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So when he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he rose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servants, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and his shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to celebrate. Now his older son was in the field, and as he came and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, and he called one of the servants and asked what these things meant. And he said to him, your brother has come, and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has received him back safe and sound. But he was angry and refused to go in. His father came out and entreated him. But he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you, and I have never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours came, who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. And he said to him, son, you are always with me. All that is mine is yours. It was fitting to celebrate and be glad. For this your brother was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. Bum, bum, bum.
There it is.
And there it is. And I mean, here's something really interesting about that is it's one of these stories that Jesus tells, and there's really kind of not any resolution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's like, it's just kind of left out there. Like, okay, the older brother's ticked off and dad kind of says his piece and where do we go? Right. What do we do? Yeah. Which again, I think is it's one of those things that you kind of like naturally like, well, what did they work things out? Did they, you know, yeah. But as we look at this parable, another series I've thought about doing on the podcast based on a book that I read called Misreading Scripture with Western Eyes. Mm-hmm. Let me just ask you guys off the cuff, and maybe you've heard me say this before because I know I've talked to you guys about this, but there was a survey done around the world of why was the son starving? You know,
yeah, I remember you talking about this.
Remember this?
I remember I answered squandered as well.
Okay, that's how you answered was squandered his wealth, right?
Yeah.
How would you answer that, Travis?
Yeah, I probably would say the same thing. He squandered all that.
So there was actually a group of seminary students that was asked this, and they were from different parts of the world. Here's what was really interesting was that the American seminary students said, yeah, he squandered his wealth, right? The guys that were from Russia said there was a severe famine in the land.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the Tanzanian group said no one shared their food with them.
Oh, wow.
What's really crazy is if we go back and look at this, awesome. Right? It definitely says, you know, he gathered, he squandered his wealth and property in reckless living. There it is, verse 13, right? Mm-hmm. But then look at verse 14. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country. And then in look at verse 15 or sorry, 16, and he was longing to be fed with the pods of the pig ate, and no one gave him anything.
It's funny.
So isn't it interesting that just in this example alone, this shows how every single person brings their own set of interpretive lenses to the passage,
right? Yeah.
Right? And your background and your shaping, you know, it's interesting because, you know, like for the Tanzanian, they have a more communal, more, community-oriented way of living. And so to them, the offensive thing was that, well,
right.
The community didn't take care of him.
Yeah.
You know, they kind of like, they don't know a stranger. If you're someone wandering through and you need something to eat, man, come in, we're going to feed you. Right. Yeah. You know, for the Russian guys who had seen, you know, some, the horrors of the, you know, growing up in communism and having bread lines and things like that. They're like, oh, it's the famine.
Yeah.
Americans, you know, the self-reliant, personal responsibility folk, man, he squandered his wealth. And in reality, is all three of those things are true. So that's kind of a little, that's a little interesting nugget there. So I just thought I'd ask that there. But, you know, as we think about this, as we think about this parable, I don't know, let's just, how do we want to get the ball rolling here? You know, how have you, maybe we'll start here. You know, how have you kind of just understood this parable? And maybe how have you changed? John, you talked about, you know, this is one of the first sermon series that you preached. So
this
was
the first sermon I ever
preached. All right.
For Chris, actually, was I don't know if I was a junior, senior, whatever it was, but that was the first sermon I'd ever preached, and it was over this.
Yeah.
And there's two things I left with that. The first thing I left with is, and this is the whole chapter, or the whole Luke 15, chapter 15.
Yeah.
The first one's about the lost coin. She flips everything, finds the coin.
Yeah.
She throws a party. Then the other one, they go to find, or the first one was finding the sheep, gives the sheep, throws a party. And there's this theme that just emerges from Luke 15. It's lost, found, celebrate.
Mm.
And it was, I remember that just coming out to me of like, just it's important to celebrate the things that were lost. And so there's that theme that emerged for me. Yeah. And the other thing that emerged for me is when people would always talk about the older brother, they always made it as if the father was lashing out on him, like in a sense of like rebuking him. And I don't think he was.
Okay.
I think he responded. What did he respond with? I highlighted it just to remember. He responded with, and he said to him, son, you are always with me, and that what is mine is yours.
Yeah.
And it's like, to me, that's not a negative response at all.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hymn of reinforcing, like, thank you for what you have done and the faithfulness you have had. Because I've always heard it in a negative connotation. And I think it was a just thing for the son to be like, well, what the heck? I've been here for years. Like, where did this come from? And the father didn't say anything lashing or rebuking. He just said, what is mine is yours.
Right.
And then they left it at that.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah.
I was going to say, I mean, for me, I always focused on the younger brother. Like, I've never, didn't give, you know, 2 cents to the older brother, but it's just, I mean, yeah, salvation. Like, yeah, we've all sinned,
right?
Walked away from God, and so, it's about.
And I think that is probably the classic interpretation. I think a lot of people think that, you know, oh, there it is. There's the younger brother. Hey, he's kind of a jerk. He kind of, you know, thumbs his nose at his dad. And, you know, I mean, even as we just walk through some of this stuff, I mean, especially in a patriarchal society, I mean, what the son did in some ways, I mean, you could almost argue could be punishable by death,
right?
I mean, that level of disrespect. I mean, he's basically saying, dad, give me my inheritance. Well, when do you normally get inheritance?
Somebody dies.
Someone dies. Yeah. I mean, he's more or less saying, dad, I don't care if you're alive or dead. In fact, I prefer you dead. So why don't you just give me the money now?
Sheesh.
So, I mean, we should really feel that, like when Jesus is telling the story to us, I mean, it offends us now, but I'm just saying, like, in a more traditional society, more patriarchal society, it'd be like, he did what? You know? Like,
yeah.
He did what? I mean, today it'd almost be like, and a son murdered his father to get his stuff. Right. I mean, if we wanted to kind of bring it into our same context, level. You know, now that changes the ending of the story, you know, so you can't.
Right.
Can't do a 21st century American parable on this, I guess, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But just trying to give that vivid imagery of Jesus. I mean, there's no doubt these people would have been shocked.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Just absolutely shocked. Right. But that's not the only thing that they would have found shocking. You know, number one is he goes to another country. Mm. Now the implication is that, okay, Jesus is telling the story. You're probably thinking, oh, it's set right here in Israel, right? But the fact that he goes to this other country is now, oh, you're leaving us for the Gentiles.
Right.
Right? And then the fact that he's like going and working for a guy who tends pigs.
Even worse.
Unclean food,
yeah,
right? You know? Huh. And so again, it's like there is this thing building. So there is a natural reading in this. And we call it the parable of the prodigal son.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the problem with that is then you're just reducing it to one line of interpretation.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So as we kind of let's look through this, if we kind of take Blomberg's approach here, okay, who are the characters?
Youngest son.
Youngest son, obviously, right? Okay. Yeah. Who are the other characters?
The eldest son.
Eldest son, okay.
And
father.
Father.
And the father, okay. So what do we do with that?
Which lesson comes from who?
What lesson comes from who?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As we just kind of sit there and think about this for a second, I want to take it a direction, but I, you know, kind of want to just, you know, let you, again, our listeners, viewers know that we just kind of roll unplugged here, right? Yeah. This is not a set plan or anything. But
for sure. Well, I think, I mean, just starting it off, like, obviously the Father represents God.
Right. Obviously.
Obviously.
Way to use that word, Travis.
Obviously.
Well, it might not be so obvious to people listening.
It could be, I guess.
I'm just giving you a hard time. You just kind of like looked at me when you said that, like, obviously. Obviously. Like, yeah. It was a bit condescending. I'm not going to lie.
No. I overuse that word anyway.
Obviously.
Dad joke.
Yep.
So, yeah, well, I was going to say, so God is like the good Father that, you know.
Right.
I don't know, dealing with us like as sinners, like, obviously. Again, obviously. Dang it. I'm caught in a loop.
That's what do you call that when you notice it now from like I forget what the something effect. Anyway.
He's a good dad that chases after his kids. And even when we screw up, he's still there, willing to accept us.
Yeah.
The oldest son, I remember The Prodigal God, the book. Mm-hmm. I remember you gave me
Tim Keller. Yeah. 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 Tim Keller.
Really I believe, if I remember correctly, he equated the eldest son to like almost an elder in the church.
Mm.
Somebody that's always been in the church and like always done the things and been on the boards and, you know, played the role of Christian for so long.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Well, and so here's the thing. Yeah, absolutely. So we've identified the three characters.
Yeah.
If we just kind of look at the story, and Travis, you've said this, okay. Yeah. It would seem to me that the Father represents God, right? You know, and then if you look at that, okay, you got two sons here, right? And so you got these two sons, and of course the one goes off, squanders his wealth, and the other one kind of stays in the house. And as you just kind of just think about the storyline of the Bible, it is really interesting that there is a story, you know, of two sons. You know, and I, you know, again, and this is me kind of throwing an interpretive lens on here and stuff. It's something that I've pondered. So I just want to throw this out there that this is just something I've really thought about. But this story to me, I've just wondered, these are questions I have, you know, questions I'd like Jesus, you know, to answer. It would be, you know, did you have in mind, you know, not that it follows it perfectly, but Jacob and Esau, you know, did you have this kind of in mind? Because, and here's why I think this is because you had always kind of had like this sibling rivalry. And so for the Jewish mind, if you talk about two sons, there's kind of a pattern of sons and two sons and different things, you know, but what's really interesting about Jacob specifically is given the name Israel. Okay. And so Jacob is kind of this fill in for Israel, right? I mean, Abraham's the father of the nation, but Jacob's the one where they get their name from, right? Because Jacob's the one who wrestles with God, gets named Israel because that means wrestled with God, right?
Yeah, right.
And so, but you have this animosity, and it's interesting because it was prophesied that Esau would be a wild, you know, a wild bully of a man, or, you know, I mean, he'd just be kind of this whatever. And Esau definitely went, you know, Esau is the father of Edom, the Edomites, you know, people who would be a thorn in Israel's side, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, he went and partnered with the other nations of the world, or like his lineage just kind of goes on. And so there's an interesting mix in like, I just wonder if we're not meant to pick up on this, you know, if you look at Israel and the role that Israel is supposed to play, Israel is supposed to be a light to the nations. Right? They're supposed to be God's heart. The Father's heart is to bless his children. I mean, that's throughout scripture. God has always desired the nations, but Israel's the one he keeps for himself. He keeps them as his inheritance, right? And what's interesting is Deuteronomy 32 actually says this, that depending on what translation of the Bible, we found on the Dead Sea Scrolls, that when it talks about how God divided up the nations and basically says, and gave them their inheritance. But Jacob, he kept for himself. So what's really interesting is you have a picture in the book of Deuteronomy itself between, you've got the father saying, Israel's mine and the nations can have their inheritance. And you look at the nations of the world and all the things they do. I mean, they're like the younger son. They're going out doing all the stuff that doesn't please God. But God's like, hey, I'm going to bless all nations through you. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. And of course, Israel fails. Fast forward, you get to the time of Jesus. And the thing of it is what the problem is sometimes when we tell this story, we focus on the younger brother's sin, but there's somebody else's sin that we don't reckon with. And what is that? Whose is that?
The eldest son.
Yeah. What's his sin?
I suppose unforgiving or,
yeah, unforgiveness could be in there. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just trying to think of, I don't know.
Yeah.
What you got?
I don't got anything. But
tell us, Chris, please tell us.
No, yeah, yeah. No, I think, you know, I think unforgiveness. I mean, I think there's definitely like pride and bitterness and, right, and different, yeah, things here. Here's what's interesting. It says this, it says, you know, now the older son was in the field. As he came back and drew near to the house, he heard music and dancing, the celebration that you were talking about, John, right, you know, and he said to him, he called one of the servants, asked what these things meant. He said to him, your brother's come back and your father has killed the fattened calf. All right, let's hold on to that for a second. The fattened calf. I read this somewhere, so I'm kind of just shooting from the hip here. But from what I understand, like, this wasn't just like go out and, you know, there was no McDonald's, there was no, right, Burger King. You just didn't go out and grab, yeah, yourself a hamburger. Yeah. You know, it's, there usually would be wealthy people in a village, you know, and they might fatten one calf and have like one feast 1 year. You know, I mean, this was like a big, yeah, big deal, right?
That's the Wagyu beef.
Right, there you go, right? The Wagyu beef. And you're inviting the community out. So this becomes a party, you know, that wealthy person celebrates. And this is something you look forward to. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, this is a spontaneous party. I'm just saying like the customs and the traditions at the time.
Right. Yeah.
And so the fact that if you killed that fattened calf, it better be for something special, right, because you're not going to just go out and do this again.
Sure. Right.
Okay. And so obviously the older brother's kind of like, what's going on? I hear, yeah, the music and dancing. I didn't get no invitation. Right. And so anyway, he was angry and refused to go in. All right. So like he's angry about his brother being back. Right.
Right.
Now look at this. It says his father came out and entreated him, but he answered his father, look, these many years I have served you and I never disobeyed your command. Pause. Let's talk about that for a second. I mean, come on, right?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, what son could in good conscience say they never disobeyed their, right, father?
Sure. Yeah.
So is there some hyperbole here? Is there some stuff we need to be going, what? You, yeah, never disobeyed?
Right.
But here's the deal. There's a self-righteous attitude that he has. Mm-hmm. There's a perception he has of himself that he deserves,
yeah,
whatever he gets from the father.
Right.
All right, hold on to that, Kay. He was angry, refused to go in. He says, look, these many years served you, never disobeyed your command, yet you never gave me a young goat. We're comparing a goat now to a cow, okay? You never gave me a young goat that I might celebrate with my friends. Pause there for a second. Is that true?
But I don't know.
Well, let's look at the beginning, right? The younger son comes, ask for the share of property. Father, give me the share of property that's coming to me. And he divided his property between them.
Oh. Yeah.
The father's already given him. And here's the thing. Mm. The custom at the time was if you were the eldest, you actually got double portion. Mm. So it's interesting because between two people, it would actually be divided into thirds because you as the oldest would get your third, you know, your third. Your brother would get his third, and then you'd get the other third because that was the double portion. That, right, you know, yeah, you'd get the double portion because as the eldest, it was kind of your responsibility to look after the family. So here's the thing is actually, if we understand it from kind of a historic perspective, now we got to be careful. This is a parable. You know, sure. I don't know if Jesus wanted us dissecting it completely, but just understanding some of the custom norms of the time, right, he definitely got, he got twice as much as his younger brother. Yeah. And so he's already looking at his father saying, you wouldn't even give me a goat for me and my friends to go have a party. Ooh. What are you talking about?
Right.
Your perception is way off.
Yeah. Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so there's this pride. There's this self-righteousness. There's this wagging your finger at your father, mm-hmm, you know, yeah, again. So, and, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say just, yeah, in the kind of what we're talking about, the patriarchal kind of time, yeah, again, you're going after your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah,
look at this in verse 30. It says, but when this son of yours came who has devoured your property with prostitutes, you killed the fattened calf for him. Now here's what's really interesting is Jesus never says specifically prostitutes. He says reckless living. He squandered his property in reckless living. But here's the deal, we have no indication that the brother would have known this necessarily.
Sure.
I mean, is he assuming?
Yeah.
right. Yeah.
Just some interesting things there, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, so the main thing is that we can see is that obviously now there's some questions here and stuff. Oh, yeah. Your dad's calling. So,
nice. So, well, thinking of that, and I'm not definitely
speaking of treating your father a certain way. Yeah. He just hung up on his
Travis.
Joe, we saw that. We saw that.
Sorry, Joe. Your son's reckless living over here.
Sorry, John.
No, you're good. But thinking of that, it reminds me of, you know, like when Jesus went into the temple and flipped out, like flipped the tables and stuff out of like a righteous anger.
Yeah.
Like of this, you know, I'm not excusing what the older brother was doing, obviously, and saying, but is there a space where like he feels like not only did he offend his father, but he just offended their family name. And there's like this righteous anger towards it.
So, you know, it's interesting, John, that's a really, I mean, that's good for us to stop and pause and think about. Okay. Because clearly, I think the audience would resonate with that. Mm-hmm. I think there have been people, especially more justice-oriented people, that would say something along the lines of, well, what kind of son wishes their father dead, wants his stuff, and then goes out and squanders it, right?
Right.
I mean, there is a way. So, you know, there could be some valid emotions that he feels, right?
Right.
But the problem, you know, and so, yes, I think it's natural for people to feel that.
Right.
Right. And it's not even necessarily like, not that it's not justified, but I think the parable pulls us into something deeper though.
Yeah.
And that's the heart of the father.
Right.
Here's what's really interesting. So the thing of it is like when you reduce this parable down to the prodigal son, you look at his sins, but you don't focus on, I think Jesus was wanting just to see the sins of both.
Right.
Right. Here's the thing. And here's what we understand. Is it possible, and this is where I kind of come back to the whole Jacob and Esau thing, right? It's easy for Israel to look at the nations of the world and talk about their debauchery and their depravity and all the stuff that they're doing and stuff. But at the same time, they think we're in God's house, we're obeying perfectly, we're the chosen ones, and they have self-righteousness that's inside of them. That even though they kind of in the eyes of other nations might be doing some right things, Jesus, I think, is kind of, again, it's a backdoor way of him going around and saying, you know what? Both of these sons are guilty. Mm-hmm. Both of these sons are missing out on the extravagance of God. Now, here's what's interesting. Here's what's really interesting. We call this the prodigal son. Do you know what the word prodigal means?
I just always assumed lost, but...
Yeah, it doesn't mean lost.
Right.
Okay. Here's what it actually means. It actually, according to Webster's dictionary, it actually means reckless spendthrift. Okay. To spend until you have nothing left. So prodigal is not really a word that we use. Mm-hmm. And, but here's, I think the beauty of this. And cause you know, Tim Keller wrote the book Prodigal God.
Right.
And so here's the thing is like when I first thought that, cause I thought the same thing as you, like, oh, that's wayward God. What? Yeah. Tim Keller's a hell, you know, he's a heretic here, you know, I love Tim Keller, but when I got his book and I actually read that, it's like, well, wait a minute. When you look at you spend until you have nothing left, certainly the son did that.
Right.
But didn't the father?
Yeah.
Huh. Didn't the father? Hasn't God, didn't Jesus come and see here's I've heard this too, and again when it comes to parables I think we've got to be careful just what's the simple lesson that it's trying to teach. But again, this parable is interesting because we do know some cultural norms that would have been during the day. You know, there are some that I've seen who have said that it should have been the older brother's responsibility to keep tabs on his younger brother in honor of the father. And so what's really interesting is Tim Keller takes an approach where he talks about, you know, Jesus is the perfect older brother who came after us, which does really fit the context of Luke, especially, you know, lost sheep, lost coin, lost son. What's interesting is this is the only one that comes close to talking about sinfulness and depravity and stuff like that. Right. The other things are just circumstances, right? Mm. And so what's interesting is Luke's got a more robust picture of what salvation looks like. Mm. So for Luke, salvation is about this restoration of, you know, justice and order, things being where they're supposed to belong. So salvation is not just about a spiritual condition. It's about everything. It's about all of life. You know, it's about the poor prospering. It's about the lost things being found. And it's also about the justice of ruling. And so, you know, Luke 15 definitely, you know, falls in line when Jesus talks about, you know, that he will be the shepherd that goes after the sheep. That's a quote back to Ezekiel where it talks about, you know, God is judging the shepherds for not shepherding the people of Israel well, right? And so God says, I will go after them, right? And so Jesus is, you know, when Luke's writing this stuff, he's definitely pulling upon Ezekiel, and Jesus is the one who would go after. So, you know, the lost sheep, lost coin, lost son, it's really interesting. And so you look at then towards the end of the parable, you know, when the father goes out, you know, he runs out to meet him, and which is crazy because he had every right to disown his son. Mm-hmm. And so again, this would have been shocking to the crowd, you know? And I just love that Jesus just kind of leaves it, you know,
right?
With this tension between the oldest, you know, and his father. So here's what Blomberg suggests as kind of the three basic lessons. Lesson number one, again, this would be the character that lesson number one is repentance is always possible for those who want to return to God. Mm-hmm. So again, the heart of the father is one that it doesn't matter how you have lived. The father is always receiving us back, showing the heart of the father. There's always opportunity. He would have received repentance from either son.
Right.
He's already been willing to share with both of his sons.
Yeah. Right.
Did they deserve it? No. And that's the thing. Even the oldest son didn't deserve it. Mm-hmm. He had a bad attitude and bad perspective and all that. Yeah. And just as much, you know, his sin was just different. Right.
Right.
Lesson number two is that God's people ought not to begrudge his generosity for even the most wayward of sinners.
Yeah.
I have to think about, you know, times in my life where I've played the part of the older brother. Mm. God, they don't deserve that.
Yeah. And it even reminds me of Jonah.
Yeah.
And Nineveh.
Yeah. 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 And so again, thinking back at the crowd, is Jesus speaking to Israel and kind of saying, you all are the older brother.
Yeah.
You think you're better. It's really interesting because Paul, when he goes through and he talks about in Romans 1, kind of like those who practice these different things, and he's going one after one after one after, you know, and he'd have been writing, you know, these people are sinful, they're this, they're that, you know, and then all he goes, and you practice these same things, you know, like his audience would have been Jewish. They'd have been like, what? You know, and that's that bit of that older brother syndrome, right?
Right.
It's like, you know, no, you've missed your part too. Mm. So the third point then is this: God in his lavish love forgives the sins of both sons and wants us to do likewise. So I kind of messed that up. The third one is actually God, right? Point number one, repentance is always possible for those who want to return to God. That's the younger son. That's the one who squandered, right?
Yep.
So that's the point for that character. Number two is the oldest son, that God's people ought not begrudge his generosity for even the most wayward of sinners. And then number three, God in his lavish love forgives the sins of both sons and wants us to do likewise. Pretty loaded.
Yeah, it is.
And I'll just say this, you know, John, you've brought this up and I mentioned it too. And if anybody wants to go farther with this parable and just really meditate on this parable, it's a short little book by Tim Keller, Prodigal God. I highly recommend it. Such a great read. And it really just challenges, because I think sometimes we focus on in our lives, we think about the times we've gone wayward, but sometimes we don't think about the times where, you know, it's Tim Keller who I've heard who said, you know, Christians have to repent for both their sins and their self-righteousness.
Right. Yeah. I just love how you started out with the whole Western, like the famine and because it really shows us that how important it is to get a full perspective from other people and other voices. You know, like I remember when Chris was mentoring me, he told me I don't remember how long, but he told me not to just listen to charismatic preachers, like listen to the whole shebang so I could get a full picture of these things. And I just love how you brought that in, because like exactly like you know, Travis said he mainly focused on the younger brother. I was talking about the older brother at the beginning, and it's like, it's really important to have that full perspective, and you can't always get that on your own. And so,
no, absolutely. Yeah. The Bible's meant to be read and understood in community. Yeah. Do you have a thought?
Yeah. Well, I was going to say just the story for me, what really just hits me hard is Jesus is the older brother that comes and chases after us.
Yeah.
And just, man, you talk about the gospel being I mean, that Jesus pursued us when we weren't pursuing him.
Yeah. That's good.
Hits me right between the eyes.
Right on. Well, man, maybe we some dad jokes to lighten it back up. I don't know, or tissue or something. I don't know. Hopefully our listeners are, you know, they've shut us off by now. It's like, man, it's too heavy. No. Anyway, but no, hey, main thing is this, is we want this podcast to encourage you. We want you to dig deeper. We want you to go in, and it's all right. If, you know, the thing we love is that people make these discoveries and make these connections. Right. And man, there's probably way more revelation in this parable than what we're touching, because the Holy Spirit's amazing at doing what he does, you know? So, hey, we want to thank you for tuning in once again. Like, subscribe, share, comment, and we'll see you next time.
Deuces.